Hello and welcome to Minbar. I'm your host, Ahmed Hanif. We live in a world where spirituality is rapidly becoming marginalized and where religious rites and practices are gradually fading away in the face of growing materialist preoccupations. One such practice is the spiritual discipline of fasting. And since we are now in the holy month of Ramadan, which is well known as the Islamic month of fasting, it seems appropriate to discuss this issue with our esteemed guest, Mr. Amir DiMartino, Educational Officer at the Islamic Center of London and Lecturer in Islamic History. Mr. DiMartino, welcome to Minbar. Sure. I think before we ask whether fasting is a declining religious practice or not, I think it's better to start with the question, how common has fasting been as a religious practice in the world religions?
Well, a brief research on the topic will quickly reveal that it was a common practice across the globe, from China into Persia, India, moving into Europe as well, even in Africa and the indigenous people of America. They had a form of fasting in different aspects. Everybody would associate different modality to it. The reason for fasting was also different, but it was a common element among all early culture. It is only really in the, even in Christianity in Europe up to the 7th century we see fasting practice among Christian community. It was after that we see a decline in this practice. And of course it's been obviously picked up by Islam, which reinforces it and gives a different shape to it, a different form to it. But it is really a common denominator with all. It's a kind of religious mystical. It covers into this area those who wanted to achieve some kind of nearness to a higher spiritual power. In ancient Greek, when it was a matter of taking important decisions, philosophers would do fasting as well. And so we have this fasting definitely was recognized as an important aspect, preparation to clear your mind, if nothing else. Yes.
Right. Yeah. I remember growing up. I had a grandmother, for example, who was a devout Christian. And I remember she used to fast. For example, in the Catholic tradition, the season of the Lenten season, for example, you know. But there are very, very few people who seem to be cognizant of that these days.
Yes, in Christianity, there is an element because Jesus fasted in the desert for 40 days. We have reference to prophets, Moses fasting, and so we have. An element which is a directive in a sense which explains tells the believer that fasting is definitely a thing to do, but it's slightly different than if you want to compare later on with Islam, because in Christianity it becomes almost like a penitence for things you've done, things you've done wrong, sins that you've done. Then you do your penitence by fasting rather than preparation for a spiritual development, like in some other culture, like for example in Buddhism. And so yes, the 40 days up to the death of the crucifixion of Jesus becomes an important thing for Christians as well. And so you see that those 14 days are fasting is prescribed. But as I said, in the Middle Ages was practiced, but it has been gradually eroded, and nowadays very few do it in a systematic, but it's never been an obligation anyway. It has always been an optional,
A recommended type.
Recommended type, where the church has recommended it. In certain time in history was more strict, and we know that certain food were completely restricted, forbidden during the fast period. But in general, over the year, it has become more, rather than a complete abstention from food, it has become an abstention from certain kind of food. And you have different kind of fasts. You have a fast of water and bread, for example, where you for a particular day, you only have water and bread. So the total fast, like we understand in Islam, is not practiced, mm-hmm. or wasn't practiced.
But is there anything like really like a total fast? I mean, when somebody thinks of a total fast, you're thinking about like having absolutely nothing to eat and drink over a full 24-hour period, you know what I mean? Yes. In Islam, you know, people break the fast after
sunset.
Yes. You know what I mean? So,
Yes, no. In Christianity, the fast of Christianity could be a part of the day. Mm-hmm. Could be, generally, it was supposed to start in the morning to be validated as a fast, but you could limit yourself just to drinking water. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is not that strict as we understand it. And the explanation they normally give is that fasting in Christianity is not to punish yourself, but it's a kind of a penitence for what you've done in the past. But you're not, it's not seen as a punishment of the flesh, like some extremists might want to make us believe. But of course, in Islam, then you have a different element, because a fast becomes a combination of a variety of elements, which is certainly a preparation for understanding.
Mm. We get to the Iranian, the Islamic fast. Now, when we're talking about decline of fasting, I mean, I think we are agreeing that in the West, the practice of fasting as a religious practice is declining. Now, is this decline a uniform across the globe, or do we still find fasting taking an important role in, let's say, some parts of the globe and not in others? In other words, is this decline taking place largely in the West?
Well, yes, in consumeristic society, they tend to be less practiced. From a religious point of view, and then we'll see that there are other developments in non-religious practices. But as far as a religious practice related to your belief, Christianity, in this case, yes, there has been a decline, which is because of the way of life. It makes it difficult in a society where we are constantly living on the move. We are constantly sort of reminded of our senses, of stimulation of our senses in all aspects of our life. You know, the visual, the taste is constantly under pressure. So it becomes an impossibility, and this is why over the years it has completely sort of been phased out, basically. Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, some of my family relatives, Christians, I've never heard of them fasting. Some of them, they might on a Friday, for example, abstain from certain food. For some, I suppose, at the time of my grandmother, I remember she used to say, I'm not eating meat on a Friday, we're only eating fish. But this, again, is not a fast in a real sense. And yes, I think it wasn't a problem in the Middle Ages to fast. And that's why the lifestyle was more conducive to this kind of practices. And definitely changing in lifestyle has also contributed in the decline of fasting. Mm-hmm. But I believe in Africa and in Latin America, it's still observed.
Right. What about this change in lifestyle? Is this change in lifestyle, you see, I mean, it contributes to the decline of fasting. Is this change in lifestyle mainly a change in attitude towards religion, perhaps? Or is it just a change in, you know, people just too busy to fast?
Certainly. There is an understanding that, well, there is no longer the preoccupation that you have a duty towards your religion or towards the teaching of your religion. Your religion tells you that as a spiritual being, you should prepare yourself, lay the foundation for your self-development, and fasting would have been one of these elements as well. And obviously, the moment you do not subscribe to your religious teaching anymore, automatically you don't no longer have the imperative of having to follow the fasting. And therefore you have surely you have this interest in what it is a religious directive. It is not difficult, and I don't think the style of life completely is to blame for that, because we know that Muslims do it, and they do it in a strict sense, and although we are now living in modern time. So I don't think it's the association exactly with the style of life, because you can adjust yourself right. to that. It is a mental frame.
It says,
you don't understand anymore the high value of religion, of spirituality, and so automatically you don't feel compelled to do that anymore.
Right. Yeah. Now, there's one kind of fasting that seems to be on the rise in the West, which is non-religious fasting, you know, fasting to lose weight, to shed toxins in the blood, and these types of things. Could you tell me a little bit more of that? And could it be a positive effect in terms of like encouraging a sort of like a revivification of religious fasting?
Sure. The positive effects of fasting on the body have been recognized not only within religion, but also in modern science. And I believe that around the mid 1800s, there was a movement in America itself, the hygienist movement.
The what?
Hygienist.
Hygienist.
Yes, but this is hygiene not to be understood in the sense hygiene in cleanness.
Right.
Hygiene comes from the Greek word of the goddess of health.
I see.
So they use this name. And there is all a school of thoughts in medicine which believe that the body is able to self-cure itself. Mm. And the principal element of this theory was the performance of fasting. And so we have a re-evaluation of fasting as something that can sort of improve your body, your physical body, your cleanliness of all parts of your body through fasting. And so it's a school which kind of grew and developed quite in America first, but then it moved also into Europe, and now we have schools they call it natural medicine, related to, again, it's an offshoot of what began in America, and now I think, you know, in all countries in Europe, you have centers where you can actually go there and practice this therapy, which are basically based on the fasting.
Mm-hmm.
The body is able to cure itself, and fast by sort of, you know, by not having food, you create a balance within yourself. Give time to your body to clean up, to mm-hmm. use those elements which are toxic for yourself. Mm-hmm. And the body itself apparently is able to do that, to absorb mm-hmm. those elements and destroy them. Regeneration of new cells. And so, you know, there was study conducted of thousands of people fasting. There were all plenty of scientific evidence to prove that. And I think now there's very few who dispute that fasting within certain parameters is certainly beneficial for the body. And on the basis of this, yes, you see a revival of fasting. And those who do that, these schools of thoughts, they also realize that there are some consequences of this fasting, some beneficial consequences, not only on the body, but also on a mental hygiene. The awareness of oneself becomes it's been recorded as one of the elements, and things that we know as religious people, we know that Islam as well sort of gives you the reason, some of the reason about the importance of fast. It's not just about abstaining from food, and so certainly not about losing weight, things
right.
like that. But you know, there are all a combination of an element, and the fact that they can now be proved from the scientific point of view that that fasting sort of you know, the moment you stop eating, and our whole body is centered around the eating factor. Since we are a child, the relation between a mother and a newborn baby is a relation of feeding, of food. Mm-hmm. We recognize that we become self-conscious about ourselves through eating at all stages of our life. And so on everyday basis, our body is constantly engaged in the thoughts of food, in pleasure from a sensational point of view, the senses, the smell. So the food plays an important role in our life. And it's by eliminating this sort of element that you see that the body is able to detach itself and sort of reflect upon itself. And this is the theory that they came up with, which is, you know, it's very rational.
Interesting.
Very interesting, yeah. You have basically a time of to think about it. The ear, the eye,
right,
sort of comes out because you is removed from all this attraction that you have around you, and you have time to reflect.
A kind of a disengagement.
Yes, it's a total disengagement.
It seems like there's a kind of a bridge then between like the fasting for a physical purpose and fasting for a spiritual purpose. What are the differences? What are the differences between fasting for like just, you know, to cleanse yourself and, you know, to remove toxins and so forth? And what's the difference with fasting for a spiritual purpose?
Well, in terms of practice, could be exactly identical. You can abstain from food from a certain hour of the day, or, you know, for a certain period of the time of the year, or, you know, sometimes in spring they do it, sometimes they do it in winter, depending on what you want to achieve on a physical level. On a on a spiritual level, of course, we approach it in a more comprehensive manner. When we fast from a religious point, from a spiritual point of view, your intention is not to lose weight, but is to acquire that detachment, which they also in a non-religious context, yes, they are aspiring to. So the detachment, you know, the awareness, the self-awareness that brings about, that in a religious sense, it's taken out and channeled into the development of religious practice, worshipping God in this sense.
Spiritual elevation.
Yes, spiritual elevation. The moment you are more conscious of yourself, you are detached of the things which keep you busy, your body is more conscious of the things around you, and of course you are more conscious about your Creator, and that becomes the time where you can connect. This is not a case that in all spiritual tradition we have a fast prescribed prior to any major spiritual exercise, or normally goes into end in end. The Buddhists do it, you know, the Hindus do it, and so yes, this is it, the preparation that once you detach yourself, the body is able now to understand the ego set inside itself, and then you are able now to perceive a different level of existence and spirituality.
So fasting kind of like sort of suppresses ego drive, so to speak.
Well, it doesn't suppress it, it frees it from the attraction that you know, that captures it throughout your normal daily life. Because food, as I say, is very engaging in terms of smell, in terms of taste, in terms of color.
Right.
And you're constantly looking at it, smelling it. And so you're thinking, the fact that you think of eating it, you know, you want to feed yourself. And so you are there, your concentration is on that. Whereas the moment you remove that, what else? You have no much around you to think about. Your routine is broken down, and so you have time to concentrate on. And
right,
that's why Islam makes fully use of this phenomenon that we now understand it's effectively taking place, and channels it into religious practice, prayers, supererogatory act of worship, you know, supplication in general. And this is, And of course, there are times of the years of the year which are identified as best time and practice. And within Islam, of course, on a spiritual level, we have the month of Ramadan, which is identified as the best time for fasting.
What is the best time for the physical type of fasting?
Well, generally, they say the beginning of spring is a good time. They identify this is the time because there's a regeneration of nature, of, you know, the cells tend to generate much, much quicker. And so, yes, this is the time. But it's not restricted to that. And there are two understandings of it. There's fasting as a preventive measure now. You know, there's belief that fasting can prevent illnesses.
Right.
Because of this innate nature that we have to that is able to regenerate the body. But there are also fasts which are used once you are ill and you want to cure, they're curative fasts. And these are two things which are moving now even outside the alternative medicine. They're moving even into mainstream medicine, which are very interesting.
And fasting is moving into mainstream medicine as
a
cure.
Yes, as a cure in certain cases of cancer, for example, a degree of abstention from food. It's prescribed.
Interesting.
You can see why, because it gives the body certainly the time to sort of destroy those toxic elements. You know, the body feeds on itself.
Right.
The moment you feed with food which is not good or which, then it will feed on that kind of food. The moment you remove that. The body will still continue to feed on the excesses that you have, and it will destroy those elements. And there was a misconception before that fast will also have a problem on your mental health, but this has been completely dispelled.
We have to take a quick break. Sure. We have to take a quick break for the news. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. And we're talking with Mr. Amir DiMartino, Educational Officer at the Islamic Center of England and Lecturer in Islamic History. Mr. DiMartino, why are people in the West not aware of fasting as a spiritual way today?
I think they are becoming more aware, I would say, especially because of the presence of Muslims. And I think in that respect, the presence of a practicing Muslim in the West has sort of remotivated even the Christians, the community. It was in 2001 that the Pope proclaimed the 14th of September, I believe, the day of universal day of fasting for peace in the world. And obviously, this is. An initiative and to relaunch, in a sense, this important aspect. And I know friends as well, old friends of mine, that once they saw me as Muslim fasting, they went back into their tradition and tried to do the same. But, you know, so we're having a positive effect on that. But I think one of the reasons is primarily because in Christianity, it is not an obligation. And so, you know, when you don't make it an obligation, in a sense, and the temptations are so many outside, you know, in everyday life.
The pub and the cabaret.
Yes,
and this
it becomes impossible to stick to it. And this is why I always felt that, you know, the code of Islam, because in Islam it becomes one of the pillars of your religion. It's not just a peripheral issue or you know, an optional. It is one of the five pillars of Islam is the fasting.
So what does fasting do? I mean, what is the mechanism of fasting to revive one's spiritual, you know, status?
Yeah, I think it works in in a variety of manners. And some of the things we described earlier on are certainly taking place, like, you know, the detachment of one's ego because of the absence of food from, you know, from the intaking of food. You know, I recognize the element. And this is why Islam says, okay, now you can achieve that. By achieving that, move a step further and trying to engage yourself spiritually with your Creator. And so you have the extra prayer that you do during the months of Ramadan. These are all platforms that allows you to, you know, to develop spiritually.
Are there levels of fast?
Certainly.
Of the spiritual fast,
yes,
that is.
Certainly there are levels. And they are all it will depend from person to person, of course. Because the general rule would be that you have to fast from sunset to some sunrise to sunset. And there are also exemptions for those who are sick, those who are children, things like that. So you have certain parameters in which this rule operates. And yes, fasting is not only seen as an abstention from food and liquid, whatever it is, from a period of time of the day, but also as an abstention from things which can distract you. For example, even moral
distract you from what?
Distract you from your concentration towards God. So because the objective of fasting at the end of the day is getting closer to God, to the Creator. And so therefore this is the major objective. There might be benefit on a physical level, surely, which they are, but the primary objective is to prepare you for to encounter, to meet spiritually, to connect to God. And and in doing so, there are a number of other things that you have to do, not only, in an everyday life. You might make joke about your friends, you might criticize individuals, but in fast, when you're doing your fast, you have to make sure that your other activity, your tongue is also under control, your eyes are also under control. You try and avoid things, we all, especially in Western society, we are constantly bombarded by images that do not help us have a spiritual self-development. Nudity,
to prevent your eyes from seeing these types of things.
And so you have to certainly keep attentions to prevent things like that. And this is why normally it is, in a Muslim country it would be much easier because, you wouldn't be subjected to all these kind of external influences. But living in the West, especially in society who doesn't fast, then you have to take extra precaution when you are in the street, when you interact with non-Muslims. Make sure that that spiritual element which is opening, the door which is opening when you kept open by yourself by doing so. But there is always a risk, and of course, and I always mentioned earlier on this as well, that, the abstention from food, it's just a means to obtain this spiritual elevation. And in its self-discipline, which we do it from morning to the evening, but that it also needs continuity after the actual fasting, when the time of breaking fast, because there's no point of having all this beautiful opportunity, and then when the time of fast, of breaking your fast comes, you sort of engage yourself into extreme eating, self-indulgence in food, and this is the thing we have to be careful, especially for us Muslims living in Western society, because we tend to sort of use same patterns of used in the West in terms of consumption. In a normal sort of society, Muslim society, the chances are that you probably get invitation for a time of breaking your fast in someone's house, in the family, you go to the mosque. So you could probably have 30 days of dining out. So
I see. Or being invited to people's homes.
Yes,
and so on.
Yes. You share a very beautiful atmosphere, but then also, you know, there are things that the guests will try to impress you, will give you extra food, the extra calories, yes, and all these things. And so
why do people do this? Why do people invite you out, invite you to their homes
to
break the fast?
The invitation in itself is a huge reward for the person who does it. Because, you know, in Islamic tradition, we are told that the person who gives you food to break your fast will get a reward, for a spiritual reward for that. So it is a common sort of in Islamic society, it's a common practice, which is very healthy and very, very beautiful in that respect. My attention is more directed to how we do that, how we break fast, and to be more conscious about the amount of food we eat at the time of breaking our fast. At the end of the day, you know, fasting also sort of reduces your weekly expenditure as well.
Right. Well, I want to get to that.
Yes.
You had mentioned controlling the eyes.
Yes.
Now, I mean, I can think about why would controlling the eyes be important in the fast, and controlling the ears.
Yes.
You know, and controlling the tongue. You know, I could see somebody asking, why is that important? You know, what kind of relationship would that have to do with consumption, for example?
Yes. I think it's all to do, this kind of control of the eyes, control, for example, as I said, if you had, in a practical terms, if you're watching television and scenes of nudity appears to you, automatically you either switch it off or turn it off, because these are all things which have the sort of imprints in your moral makeup of your body. And so mentally they have consequences. You might not realize, but they have consequences in our ethical development. And by doing away with that, we create a barrier between those things which are constantly engaging our mind. You know, sexuality especially is one of the things that after food is one of the most important and most engaging things for a human being.
Right.
And so therefore plays an important role in our life.
And for some, before food.
Yes. And so, you know, you have to make sure that this thing which makes your ego sort of engraved in the attachment of this world are removed. And this is why, sort of, in a context of watching television, or you try to do away with all this, like music, for example. Music is another element that engages you. The whole body can be attracted by it. And this is why it is advised, you know, to reduce all these things to the minimum, especially during Ramadan. You know, so you concentrate on the reading of Quran, reading of supplications, which suit you down.
So when you control the eyes, the ears, the hands, and so forth, you're actually controlling, as I get it, the immoral consumption, or the consumption of immorality through the limbs.
Yes.
I see.
This is why it's interesting, because in Islam, actually sleeping during the month of fasting is considered a form of worship, because you are in a state of fasting. Your eyes, your ears are completely abstaining from anything that can be destructive for the soul, and so therefore that is equated to a worship.
I see.
In this particular month, and so it shows the importance of that.
So a person can sleep all day.
Yes.
And get up at night and...
Well, those who are lucky to do that, it could be a thing. But of course, you have a constant reminder that you are a member of a society. And those individuals who are less fortunate than you need to be helped. Mm. And this is why within the fasting months, we also have one of the most important things, which is charity. Charity is also highly meritorious during the month of Ramadan. There is constantly this component of the social element. And this is why the major distinction between the Christian concept of fasting and the Islamic one, where, you know, it's always there is always that social element, fasting,
right,
breaking fast together, going to the mosque, inviting people at your home, constantly an important mm-hmm. factor of it, because, you know, we are a society, we are human beings, we are supposed to share in the pain of those who have less fortunate than us. And fasting as well, you know, the fact that you are actually experiencing hunger, experiencing the deprivation of food like it happens in many countries, even nowadays mm. around the world, would help you also to empathize with,
right.
with those individuals,
right.
And perhaps to help you to put your hand down in your pocket.
Right.
And sort
so
of
do you find like in fasting that there's an increase in Islamic fasting, for example, there's an increase in acts of good in the society as opposed to other times?
Yes, well, on a personal level, yes, I do. I noticed that, because you're not supposed to get angry when you're not supposed to lose your temper towards your family, your friends, or anybody mm-hmm. in that particularly during Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there is certainly a change of attitude. Your sense is kind of sort of a less receptive to stress because mm. because you know the food, you eliminate your food from it, and you know the whole body is adjusted to a sort of a more quieter and a more sort of
serene
atmosphere, calm that would help. And that, of course, if you transfer this into a society, then you see that it will bring the results.
When you look at some of those Muslim countries,
sure.
especially like in some of the Gulf states,
yes,
you see that, for example, especially when the fasting is happening in the summer,
yes,
you know, but it isn't restricted to that, you yes. know, and. You find that people stay in all day,
yes,
and then they come out all night,
yes,
and they eat and hang out and whatever. Does this reflect the actual, you know, spirit of the fast?
Certainly not. And we could quite comfortably say that this is a minority attitude. And in most Muslim countries, life goes on as usual. You know, shops, industry are working, workers are in sort of engaged in the fields, in agriculture, and yes, of course, in certain sort of Gulf states, Arab states, you see that the heat, the temperature makes it very difficult to engage in normal things. Maybe you have longer break, or breaks are distributed in a way that you know, those hottest time of the day people can sort of rest. But certainly, no, this is not the spirit of fasting. It shouldn't be an impediment, and it's not an impediment, as I said, as I explained earlier, it does not have effects, physical effects on you, in a sense that it reduces your power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it certainly the report shows that it actually increased the energy, you know, by having sort of an accurate diet after mm-hmm. you fast, that overindulging in sweets and things like that at the time of breaking your fast, your body regains vitality, mm-hmm. and you are able actually to be more efficient in terms of mm-hmm. energy level. Yes, you know, you always get those mm-hmm. ones who will take advantage of it,
right.
and sleep it off throughout the day. Mm-hmm. It's not considered a sin as such, uh-huh. but certainly it's not a good practice.
Yeah, it's kind of cheating, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what has made, Islam has almost made the fast of Ramadan famous.
True, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know of any religion that has something like the fast of Ramadan.
Yes.
What has made the fast, especially the fast of Ramadan, something so alive and maintained in Islam, whilst in other religions, you know, fasting is declining. What has made the fast of Ramadan so powerful?
Well, I would assume that the most important factor of it is that it is one of the pillars of the religion.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by the pillars of a religion?
You know, the religion has certain pillars. We identify like the belief in God, the belief in the prophethood, the Prophet Muhammad, and so the belief in giving charity. These are what the basic things of the religion, and they're part of the things, the obligatory. The prayer is an obligation that the believer has, and the moment fasting becomes also was described as an obligation, then automatically it's not an optional any longer.
Okay.
So Muslims know that by doing fasting they are fulfilling a religious obligation.
Right. If they don't do it, what do they get? What happens to them?
On the terms of physically in this world, you might not get anything yet, but surely you will not get a spiritual reward in the hereafter. Mm-hmm. I know individuals, for example, that would not necessarily practicing their religion throughout the year, but yet in Ramadan they come out and say, "Oh, I have to fast, I have to pray," and you know, obviously this is a misconception of their own religion. But the fact that Ramadan has so much pull on them, it's an indication of the effect of it. And I think, and for everybody who has experienced Ramadan at least once in his life, it understands what it means during the 30 days, to the extent that when it finishes, you have come into this pattern of, you know, getting up in the morning, having a little something before your morning prayer, then, you know, you don't eat throughout the day, you are kind of looking forward towards the time of breaking your fast, and then, after 30 days, all this, you know, breaking fast together with friends and believers, all this comes to an end.
Right.
And it's almost like you miss something. And those who have done that, those who do that, they know what it means. So actually, the sweetness which is involved into this practice as well. And as I said,
they miss the fast.
And this is why I said it's not a coincidence. Now those who are outside the religious sphere are re-evaluating or rediscovering fast for whatever reason, they speak very highly of it in terms. I think we have still a role as Muslims living in the West to attach, to give it the right meaning, to, you know, to show the true essence of it, because in a sense the Islamic fasting really encompasses. If you look at fasting in Buddhism, in Hinduism, in Christianity, you really see how this fast is actually, in Islam, this kind of fast has encompassed all these elements. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Yeah. Can the Islamic tradition of fasting help revive the practice of fasting in the rest of the world?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's already doing so. As I said, you know, the fact that the Pope made a public statement about fasting in public. You know, Christian society have tended to have it as a very private thing, and some of them they feel uncomfortable with Muslims saying, "Oh, we are fasting, we are fasting, we are fasting," and we are not supposed to say we are fasting. In fact, you know, we are not boast about fasting.
Right.
It's a religious obligation, and we do it publicly. But I think because of this public display that we do, the mosques are open in the evening. It has become, as you say, it's famous.
But is it a public display, or is it just? Yeah. It's almost a celebratory aspect of the month of Ramadan among Muslims.
And I think it certainly is a time for community to come together. I mean, I don't know of any member of community which meets more often than during the months of Ramadan, for example, in one particular place.
Right.
Because they all go, let's go to the mosque after the iftar. And you see them, you see faces that you haven't seen for a year perhaps, you'll see them there in that place. Uh-huh. And it reinforces community ties, which is very, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And in that, we are offering sort of examples to, uh-huh. to other communities. And I know in at the Islamic Center where I work, we have in the last few years Christians who have come in solidarity.
And fasted in solidarity.
Yes, to fast and break fast mm-hmm. with us, and they all have described it as you know as a very moving and spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. So yes, we certainly have. I know we have to be careful all the time not to be self-indulgent in overdoing our things and focus especially on the food that we are consuming mm-hmm. at the time of iftar, because you know we have a golden opportunity to improve ourselves physically and spiritually. Let's not lose it by, overdoing the time of iftar.
Uh-huh. So you mean like at the time of iftar we should be a little more yeah. moderate in what we consume?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. We don't want to make up. We're right. not supposed to make up for what we have lost during the day. The idea is that, you know, you reduce the yeah. and you continue. You right. experience this reduction.
Right.
In your,
right. You don't collapse
pack
your...
It up, yes. Yeah, you pack every, you know, those few hours that you uh-huh. have, all you've lost during mm-hmm. the day. No, this is... Mm-hmm.
So how do people, how should people spend their nights, or the nights after the fast?
Well,
you know?
Well, generally, the best practice is to have to break your fast with something small.
Right.
And even actually have a gap between your breaking fast with a tea or with dates or something mm-hmm. light. Then have a gap, half an hour, 1 hour, and then move into your dinner. And your dinner should be what you normally have. You're not
right.
expected to be extravagant. What you normally would have during your normal day throughout the year.
Right.
The normal food and things.
You're running out of time, and it's
yes.
good we ended up with breaking the fast.
Yes.
yes.
So.
I want to thank you for joining us on Minbar. We were talking with Mr. Amir DiMartino, lecturer in Islamic history and educational officer at the Islamic Center of England. If you have any comments, questions, or criticisms about this show, please don't forget to write us at minbar@presstv.ir. That's minbar@presstv.ir. And until next week, see you same time, same channel on Minbar. Take care.